Hello, and welcome back to Slut PhD. I'm your host, Julie Fennell, and today I am with one of my dear peeps, LCXO, and together we're going to be talking about the art of switching. This is your friendly reminder that, as always, this podcast is intended for people who are legal adults in the place where they are listening from, which means that if you, like me, are coming from America, that I expect that you are at least 18 years of age or older. Would you like to quickly introduce yourself, Elsie?
Hey, Julie. Thanks for having me on. So I've been in the kink scene for, I think, 4 years now, and initially identified just as a sub, and then for the past several years have been identifying as a switch. Sometimes I'll say subleaning switch, but these days I'm more just saying switch.
And I identify as a dom-leaning switch most of the time these days. And we'll talk more about the journey that got us here as we go on through this episode. But we first want to start out by talking a bit about what switch really means, because in my opinion, it's an extremely poorly understood term within the BDSM community. And I think it's like barely used at all outside of the community. Certainly when I took my survey in 2017, it was pretty rare to see people who were like really identifying as switches who weren't in the scene. If you go back a long way among my podcast episodes to the third one where I talk about gender and BDSM roles, one of the things I talk about in that episode are these three lines of kink identities of top to bottom, sadist to masochist, dominant to switch, submissive. And the thing about switch is we didn't come up with three different words for that. And so we just made switch the word for each of the thing along those lines. But the reality is that you could be a switch on any of those lines, but not on the other ones, or you could be a switch on all of them. And we didn't really distinguish between them. So I think a lot of times people really struggle to find their switchness amidst that confusion. Also, I've been doing this longer than Elsie, and I will say that the BDSM community's perspective on switching has changed a lot over time. When I first got into the scene, and even when I was doing interviews in 2012, I specifically remember interviewing at least one woman who told me that she felt like she had like encountered more oppression in her life, basically, because she was a switch than because she was bisexual, which I thought was fascinating. She's been heavily involved in like more traditional leather community than the pansexual BDSM scene per se. In fact, part of why she left the like dyke leather world was because she was a switch and she was bisexual, and she felt very unwelcome there for both reasons. But certainly the pansexual scene has also changed in this attitude over time. So I first started teaching a class on switching in 2015, I think. At that point, whenever I would teach it, it started to feel like a support group where people would just like complain about how hard life was as a switch. People were just like expected to identify as a dominant or a submissive at the end. And over time, when I've taught the class, that has happened less and less. And if anything, I feel like nowadays, if you're young kinksters, it's like stop being cool to like strongly dominant or submissive. It's like, oh, that's something that I can say from straight people. Has that been your experience too?
It has been, yeah. So I'm like newer to the scene, but I feel like more of my kinkster friends are switches than not.
Yeah.
Then again, most of them are polyamorous bisexual, so yep. Refuse to make a choice ever. So like some of them are much more leaning in one direction, but many, many of the folks in my life are switches.
Yeah, and certainly even in 2017 when I took my survey, like being a switch was highly tied to being bisexual, pansexual, queer, and it was true at that time especially that like being a dominant or being a submissive was much more tied to being straight, so that perception was backed up by the data in that sense. But over time I feel like even that has faded, and more of the straight people that I know, which I mean to be fair is mostly men. Men I know increasingly identify switches. But I think there's also remains a lot of confusion in the community around the term switch, maybe because it's increasing identity. And so for the longest time, when I heard people talk about being a switch, they would tend to use the term, what I would encourage people to say was soft switch, which was to say like, oh, I have a partner over here who's my dom, and I want a partner over here who's my sub. And like, that's the way they understood what it was to be a switch, versus what I would talk about as a hot switch, which was somebody who wanted to switch in the context of a single relationship. Also someone often who found like switching in and of itself to be sexy and a turn on, as opposed to like oh, I'm just somebody who likes both of these things, but like there's an active position that is being a switch that was a turn on for some people. And again, I've seen more of that emerge over the last few years. Like when I first got into the scene, I was one of the few people I ever saw doing switch scenes. And nowadays, I'd say Elsie does way more of those than I do. And she's going to tell stories of it because hers are way more recent than mine. But it's definitely something that's relevant for scenes in the sense of like, did you have a switch scene? It's also relevant for identities and like, I am a switch and what that means to you. And it's also relevant for the relationship dynamics. So like, do we have between ourselves a switchy relationship dynamic? And what does that mean for us? And there's, again, like these complicated nuances of what that can look like. So for a long time, I had two subs and both of them were my riggers, which is to say they tied me up, which is not the way this is usually done. But I love being tied up. And so I was like, I'm not going to, like, you guys are accomplished riggers. I'm not going to agree to be your dominant if that means you're not going to tie me up anymore. That's a shitty arrangement. How about you tie me up? And like, this is something that we do for my pleasure. And you know, like, I think usually when they tied me up, it wasn't the way they tied other people, which was fine. Mm-hmm. I didn't care. like, I still really enjoy being tied up. And so I wanted to make sure that that stayed part of the dynamic there. And that's kind of what I would think of as being kind of a low-level switch in that sense. So the power dynamic kind of stayed the same, even though the activity was, like, getting pretty switchy. But then there's kind of, like, high-level complicated switching stuff where who's in control is no longer as clear. Elsie's going to tell stories about that. But I think it's really helpful to also conceptualize the difference between switching as a verb versus being a switch, which is more of a noun. So like switching is an activity, something that we're doing versus this identity or experience of what it means to be a switch. So I'm going to ask Elsie to start off by telling the story of how she came to journey through the BDSM identity as an identified switch.
Yes. So when I first came into the scene, when I was just thinking about what I was interested in, it was all, you know, in the vein of being submissive, different activities, but I didn't have really any interest in doming. I think part of that was just a confidence thing. I was new to the scene. It felt like you needed a lot of skills and a lot of experience to dom. But really, like, that felt like where my interest fell. And it was actually in your FemDom 2.0 class at the first big kink event I went to, where you made the distinction between topping and bottoming and sadism and masochism and dominance and submission. And I had never mentally separated those things because I had realized I had a great interest in hurting people. but I didn't know how to channel that with being a submissive. But once those gears started turning, it was like, oh, I can top things with someone tell, like, I'd love for you to tell me how to hurt you. That sounds amazing. And so then I started doing scenes like that. And as I was doing more topping and more sadism, it started to come out. I was like, oh, I have ideas. Like, I want to do things to people. I want to be in control. And so I started identifying as a switch. And at first those felt like, because dominance was so new for me, it was very distinct, two very different types of headspaces. I had to really mentally prepare, like, I am going to be doming now. Like, I'm in that space and I couldn't switch mid-scene and I would need time in between scenes where I was doing one or the other to like really switch my headspace. But the longer I've done it now I switch within scenes. I have different relationship dynamics where they're very switchy within the relationship and I feel very comfortable in both roles now.
Yeah, one of the same subs I was talking about, who he was the switchiest switch I ever met in my entire life. Like, he could flip on a fucking dime between, like, absolute dom top space and absolute sub bottom space. And I, before I met him, thought that I was one of the switchiest switches that I had ever encountered, which, I mean, I still, at the time especially, was. And then I met him, and I was like, I have got nothing on you. I at least have to go to the bathroom in between these, but it took nothing for him to switch. And I was just like, how can anyone move between these? And, like, especially because the extremity of his headspaces was so strong. Yeah. Whereas I would say part of, for myself at least, especially back when I was doing a lot more switchy stuff, one of the things that I really strove for a lot of times was to kind of have a switch headspace, which ironically he said he didn't have and I never saw it. So I think it's true. Like, for me to look for a switch headspace where it's like intentionally seeking this power ambivalence to me was something that I found very hot. And I feel like I keep using this in the past tense because for myself nowadays, it's gotten more and more vague. I got into the scene identifying as a dom-leaning, masochistic-leaning switch. And then I spent several years doing a lot of bottoming. I think much like you, I also had a lot of understandable confidence issues around that, where I just don't really know a lot. And so I didn't feel like confident doing a lot of stuff. And then over time, so I was bottoming a lot more and identifying very heavily as a switch at that stage. And then increasingly found that no, really, I was a dom-leaning, masochistic-leaning switch after all. And I figured out more and more about how to manifest that for myself. But, you know, I often use labels for myself, half-jokingly, but also somewhat, like, truly as, like, the bottomiest dom or the dommiest bottom, where I just, like, really like people to do stuff to me and tell them how to do it. And I get along very well with toppy subs. When Elsie appeared and was like, hey, I really just want to strap on fuck a dom. I'm like, great. She was like, people are confused when I say that. I'm like, no, this is my world, man. This is something I am totally cool and comfortable with. This is my game.
Well, you're giving a lot of credit because what happened was I was in your femdom class and you said something along the lines of, where are all the femdoms
who want a femdom?
Fuck me with a strap on. And you were looking the other direction, and I raised my hand. I was so embarrassed. I like pulled it right down right away. And then I walked up to you. This is how we met. Up to you after the class, attempting to flirt with you using this thing you had just handed me on a platter, but instead just flubbed it and was like, I own a strap-on.
Yeah.
And you were like, cool.
Cool. And later she sent me a message. It's like, I was trying to flirt with you. I was like, really? I had I was like, hey, I get along great with this mentality, and I like toppy subs, and I think that it's really uncommon actually to meet that many doms who will say things like that, especially when you're dealing with like a lot of toxic masculinity in the scene around domination. But I think it's even worse for women, because women already feel like their dominance cred is questionable by virtue of the fact of their femininity. And so they feel like they have so much to prove by not bottoming. And I'm just like, fuck it, I don't care. Like, I want subs who are intimidated by my bottoming. that's the way I look at it. And, you know, that way there'll be, like, I'm never going to intimidate Elsie with my ability to take pain. She's one of the most masochistic people I've ever met, but that's fine. So I think there's for myself, my journey to identifying as a switch has been really complicated. And it's funny because I spent so long like really ranting and railing against the way this scene has this like purity culture around what is a true dom or what is a true sub. And I still feel really strongly against that we shouldn't focus on that. And then ironically, having put so much time and energy into that, I started to have ideas about what true subs, true switches look like. And now I feel like I'm not one. My switch cred has really diminished over time, even though I recognize that a lot of the dynamics that I have certainly seem pretty quirky to a conventionally minded other person who just like expects like this is what DS is gonna look like, where I'm like, no, I mean, it's cool. Subs want to tie me up. That sounds great. Like, I'll tell them how to do it even. That's not how that's like traditionally supposed to go. Or like, I love to tell people how to hurt me. That's great. But I think it gives you some sense of the range of what being a switch can be, of like there's like a lean to it, or there's kind of like a place that's clearly in the middle. And then also it's like, I think there's a lot of people in the kink scene, especially nowadays, and again, way less so when I first got in, I don't care as much about power these days, where like, there once was a time when everyone's like realization, like, their motivation for being there at all was 24/7 DS dynamics. And over time, I feel like that's just not as much what people care about. And so as things have gotten less focused on power, the idea of being a switch can be more about topping and bottoming and sadism and masochism. And I definitely consider myself someone who does care a lot about power dynamics. And so the way that I look at switching often still has a lot to do with the way that I envision power dynamics. But I think a lot of switches, that's way less of the thing for them. They want, the interest is far more on the top down sadism, masochism side. Does that feel true from your experience of playing with people too, or has it mostly been power based?
That's a great question. I feel like a lot of my play has been power based, but I'm not sure how much of that is just that it's of a lot of interest to me. The thing I really like about switching is exchanging who has the power. I find that very interesting within a scene or within a relationship. But
it's like when you look around the people who you see doing more, especially more switchy stuff, I feel like you describe pretty intense power differentials going on within the course of that. But I feel like most people who do that tend to do less of that. Should you tell listeners at home about your exotic switch life?
Oh, yes. I'm happy to story share. I love to story share. And these are particularly scenes where the switch happened in the scene, which actually, now that I've been thinking about it, a lot of times, scenes where I'm switching in scene are less about power exchange and more about top bottom, say there's a masculine-kism exchange. But on to the fun story. Which Doug gets the credit for the idea for this scene, absolute brilliance. He comes up to me at a kink happy hour and he's like, I've got a pitch. And I'm like, I'm ready, because his pitches are all like, you always agree to his pitches. They're gold. He says, I watched The Princess Bride the other day, and it just came to me that there's a perfect opportunity for a switch scene here. There's a two-part scene. The first part, Buttercup and the farm boy, and she has him prove that he is truly in love with her. She orders him around. He works on the farm. He says, as you wish. Perfect. The second half of the scene, he comes back as the Dread Pirate Roberts. Buttercup is now with Prince Humperdinck. Obviously, he must take her to the pain. So I'm like, absolutely, 1,000%, sign me up for this. We had a costume change. We watched the movie together to memorize the lines. And we did this at a camping kink event out where a lot of people could watch us.
There's great photos of this.
So many, so many good photos on FetLife. Anyway. It went very, very well. We were both very switchy people. And I think there were a lot of things that really helped get in the headspace of the two halves. Like, even though I was dressed like cute, it was like my Renaissance fair costume for Buttercup. So we started off the scene, and this was a very like silly vibe for a scene too. Like, I've done more intense, serious switch scenes, but this was about like play. Like, this was really play. But I did some very mean things. I made my farm boy fetch me some water and then dump it on his own head for my amusement. really hit him pretty hard. So we sort of did that for a while and intensified with, like, he's proving that he's truly in love with me. And, you know, for those familiar with the movie, when they admit their love for each other, he goes off to make his fortune so that he can marry her. And I finally reached that point where I felt like we had hit a peak, and I forget exactly what I said, but we signaled that he was going off to earn his fortune, at which point we had a costume change, into much darker costumes. So he had, like, you know, the mask for the Dread Pirate Roberts. We had a cameo of one of our friends for Prince Humperdinck, and, you know, very much switched to, he was doing a lot of, like, impact and like degradation, yelling at me for, you know, betraying true love, all of this. We also did the roll down the hill. So he also signaled to me, I don't think we discussed the line beforehand either, but he said something like, I grow tired of this. And I said, you could die cut into 1,000 pieces for all I care, and pushed him down the hill. And there was the, he says, as you wish, I realize it's Wesley. But then, unlike movie, we got to fuck at that point. But that was a real blast, and we did have sort of a hard break in the scene with the costume changes, so it was very well built in. Other switch scenes I've done is more of a just feel it out in the moment. So I did a scene with my spouse Jay at a recent kink event where we planned to switch in the middle, but there was no exact, like, this is the middle point.
No costume change.
No costume. Well, the costume did change, but we didn't. Anyway. I was a jewel thief, a famed jewel thief, And he was a private detective hired to find the jewels. And I was wearing an evening gown and he's wearing like a hat. And I'm tied up and it starts as an interrogation scene where he's trying to get the location of the jewels from me. So we did a lot of knife play. We did impact. But the premise of the scene, I was never going to give him the information. I could withstand a lot. So I was not going to tell him where the jewels were. So he was going to basically torture me until he was at the point where he was like, you're not going to tell me anything. And at that point, I give him a job offer. I seduce him. I tell him, come work with us. Come be a jewel thief. I convince him. He lets me go. Oh, so over the course, I didn't mention one of the most fun details, which was I was wearing an evening gown, which he cut off of me with the knives. That was the like first thought, the first seed of the whole thing. I was like, I want you to cut an evening gown off of me. How do we make that work? So he had cut the evening gown off of me. So I seduce him. He lets me go. We have sex in which I'm very much in control. And, you know, spur of the moment thing, the remains of the dress were around. So I was using them to like choke him and like pull him into me. And then we like come in on the end of the scene and he comes. And as he's like still like sort of lost in that, I grab the dress and I tie up his hands and tie him onto a post. And then I escape.
You won.
I won.
You were the seducer and you won. So these are like obviously high concept, extremely elaborate switch scenes. You don't have to go this far out in order to be like a total thing. I think another thing that we didn't talk about is the idea of scenes that are intentionally power neutral, which it's like if you engage something so far to extremes, you no longer know who's in control. And sometimes I think that power neutrality can be sexy in and of itself, or also a certain degree of power ambivalence. And so, for example, one of my exes, when I had this like long-term switch relationship with, like, we got someone who was very subby to tie us up together, because, you know, like, this was an era where lots of the female riggers were subs, which is an era that's gone. But anyway, like, we got someone to tie us up together, and then it was like, okay, great, now we've done this elaborate scene together tied up, and then our reward was that we then, like, fucked her with a baseball bat. But, like, yeah, it didn't have any, like, clear vision of, or like, together and control had a thing that we were doing, but we needed a third person to help. And so there was no obvious power place. There's also a state that I call middling, which isn't exactly, because there's a place that's not exactly being a switch, but it's a place that I'm very happy. And so I often joke, like, you know, the subbiest of subs are the people when they get into any sort of multi-person dynamic where they're always like, I want to be on the bottomiest bottom of whatever this situation is with like three or four people. Like, they always want to be the one who is underneath where everyone else is telling them what to do. And then there are people who like always want to be the ones who are in control. Like, if there's lots of people there, they're the ones who want to be bossing everyone around. And then there's people like me who are like, I really like the situation where, like, I'm in the middle and, like, someone else is hurting me, but I'm still able to tell somebody else what to do and make their life miserable. Like, that's something that really pleases me. I know I always really loved the idea of having a whipping girl. Where, like, I did bad things and someone else got punished. Similar kind of vibes to that. But being in the middle there, I also have been told that I've never participated in any high protocol stuff. But for anyone who's ever heard the term, high protocol is like a BDSM thing with, like, it's usually a type of dinner or like event. People tend to dress up very much for this. But high protocol is like there's these strict rules about how the subs are supposed to behave, and they're supposed to serve the doms who are all fancied up and sitting around a table or whatever. You know, they come around, they serve things, they rub their feet, whatever the particular rules of that particular party are. And I always thought that didn't actually sound that appealing to me. I was like, yeah, maybe with a particular person at a particular time, but I was never especially enamored of that. But then some of them told me, like, well, the switches are the ones who, you know, get to be the major domos. So the ones behind the scenes are telling the subs what to do. Like, that sounds like way more fun to me. But being in the middle of that job is something that, like, some people assign in high protocol switch scenarios. And so I think it could be helpful in thinking about yourself too, as you're on these BDSM journeys looking for your own roles of, Do you like being the person who is on the bottomiest bottom? Do you like being the person who is on the toppiest top? Or do you like being the person where it's a little bit fuzzier than that? And I know for me, I like telling lots of people what to do. That makes me happy. But I really like if some of the things I'm telling them to do is to hurt me. And I like if some of the things I'm telling them to do is to tie me up. So I recognize these are not classically dominant positions, and I don't feel some need to be like, no, I'm the one who's drool here, and like that be the thing that justifies my existence as a dominant human being. It's like, no, I like what I like. And I feel like the more you can embrace that aspect of yourself, the easier life is as a switch. And I think a lot of times when we're fighting that impulse and engaging in the mental gymnastics of trying to prove to ourselves, oh, I'm really the one who's the dominant here. I'm like really the one who's the submissive here. Those can sometimes be fun, especially if both of you are engaging them together. And I mean, there is a certain fun sort of sadism to sometimes making, you know, really submissive people do things they don't like to do. Like, God, you're going to have to hurt me. You don't like doing that. Like, that's a fun, fucked up thing to do, right? But like, there's also a place of admitting, oh, look, like most people aren't all one thing or the other. And it's like being straight or gay. It's like, but maybe most people aren't actually 100% straight or gay. Most people are a little bit something else, right? I think most people are a little bit bisexual. Most people are a little bit switchy. And, you know, I think the more you embrace aspects of yourself that can change your relationship dynamics a bit.
Yes. Yeah. And I think, for me, I like being in all three of those positions. They scratch a different itch for me, being like toppy top, bottomy bottom, middle. Like if I want to, in these scenes where I switch mid scene, I'm not likely to get into heavy subspace or like that top dom like flow state.
Yeah.
So if I'm looking for one of those, I am more likely to do a scene where the dynamics are set the whole time. I love both of those. I love the feeling of the flow space, of feeling totally in control. I love the like super floaty, I'm totally gone subspace. But the power struggle can also be really fun.
Yeah.
So it's just different things and what you're looking for. The, you know, the eternal, the great thing about switching and the terrible thing about switching is it opens up a world of possibilities.
Oh, well, yeah. And I've definitely talked to people who have different experiences of that. I'd say more people that I talk to agree too, that like the heavier headspaces tend to not be switchy, or they tend to be. But part of why I felt like I lost my switch cred was like I hadn't, the poor hadn't been in subspace since 2019, which I don't know what year you're listening to this, but that was 6 years ago now. I haven't been in subspace for 6 years. I'm like, why do I feel like I'm like a true switch anymore? Subspace for not long. But I mean, it also raises a funny question of like, are you like a true switch in that sense? You have a switch space. I definitely still have a switch space. I definitely still enjoy those power struggles. I definitely still enjoy power ambivalence moments, which isn't always the same as a struggle, right? Like where it's just like we're actively looking for the thing that's questionable about the nature of this particular power arrangement. I find that fun. But yeah, I've rarely met people who have like equal weight on a dom space, switch space, subspace, who I always, you know, yeah, describe as the two switches. they're very rare. In much the same way that it's a bit rare to find somebody's all dom and all sub, right? Like those things are pretty scarce. Another question that I like to pose to switches that I think can be really helpful is when you're very stressed, what do you tend to lean towards more? And I feel like a lot of times that answers some of the underlying question about what your lean might be if you were unsure. Although for me, if I'm very stressed, I'm not a great dom and I don't seek them. And it's partly because I get insecure about hurting someone too much. But if I'm stressed, the thing I want to do is hurt somebody. So it like raises my like pot and sadism. But it definitely, I would say, lowers my dominance because I'm like, I don't have to think too much. And if I'm domming, I have to think. And so if I'm just in a topping sadist place, then it's way more about hurting. You say you're the same, like you're stressed, you want to hurt somebody?
Well, it's both. But like sadomasochism in both forms is on the mind.
I see.
But definitely the like, if I'm in like not the best mental place, I worry about, like, especially because I'm such a masochist, I worry about hurting the other person more than I need to. But another thing what you were talking about brought up for me, the switch imposter syndrome is real. It's the same, like, with the, like, bisexual imposter syndrome.
Yes.
When you're, like, might have more partners of one gender or the other at any particular moment. Like, there's definitely been moments in my kink life where, you know, some of my, like, relationships, like, more like capital P partner relationships. Some of those have been switchy relationships. Some of them have been a more set dynamic. And there's been times where I'm like, I am sexual. I am a switch. I just happen to only be in relationships with cis men where they are all my dominants. So I'm doing way more subbing. But I'm still a switch. Like, I know I can access that space. I know I have an interest in that space. And it's not necessarily the activities I'm doing or the frequency of those that determine, like, my identity.
Yeah. For me, I would say a big part of that imposter syndrome that I work on for myself is more about, like, but what do I crave? What do I fantasize about? What do I need? And so it's like, all right, if I'm only having sex with men, I still want to be having sex with women.
Yeah.
Definitely still crave having sex with women. And if all I have in my life are subs, you know, then do I crave subspace? And the answer is no. If living would tie me up. So that's where I'm like, yes, I will continue to fall hard onto the switch line on rope space for sure. Like, in fact, I start losing my pleasure being in tying other people if I'm not being tied up. And that's, I think, another thing that can really plague a lot of switches is they start losing. It's happened to me in a lot of relationships I've been in where people had, like, a balance off, especially for them, and also for myself as well. You can lose the pleasure in doing that side of the thing because you don't have the other one. So, like, if I don't have someone who is tying me, I start to lose my pleasure in tying other people because I want both sides of that so hard. And I think a lot of people have that experience of, oh, it's hard for me to really sub right now because I'm not doming anyone. I've talked to a number of switches who tell me that they start struggling to have enough energy to sub well if they don't have a sub themselves, which I find interesting. Yeah. So I feel like that's more on, like, the soft switch side problem of things where, like, your world is divided between people that you are dominating and subbing. But I've talked to a number of people who've really struggled with that. And it's definitely been a problem in my relationships as well, usually for other people. So I'm going to talk about how you get good at switching / being a switch and how you can develop some of that skill set, especially assuming that you already have a decent kink toolbox. I don't really know how to tell someone how to do this if you're starting from nothing.
Yeah.
But if you're starting with a bit of a kink toolbox, one of my biggest pieces of advice is to think outside the box. And I think part of why I tend to find switches very attractive is because they tend to be very creative. And I would say personally, creativity is my biggest turn on. And so if you are going to be a switch, you tend to have to be a little bit more creative because fewer people are telling you how to do it.
That's true.
When you walk into Kinkland, people give you a recipe for how a scene is supposed to go. And that scene does not usually include switching. And so in order to do that with them, you have to think outside the box. So one of the exercises I used to engage in for myself back in my early kink days was I would walk around dungeons, especially when I was doing my research, I had to spend a lot of time just staring at people in dungeons, which, believe it or not, can get boring after a while. The theme doesn't change, right? And you're not intimately engaged with it. And so, also, I was not a very visual person. It doesn't really necessarily do a lot for me. I'm a watch porn, and for example. And so I'm sitting in a dungeon having to watch people as my, like, work. I'm pretty sure that this has happened to people who are dungeon monitors. I'm like, I had to watch people fuck for 3 hours. Anything can get boring when it's your job. But anyway, I would walk around dungeons and watch people's scenes, which I couldn't hear what they were saying usually because the music was very loud. But I would watch them engaging in these classic BDSM things of, like, spank bench or whatever. And then I would imagine making it switchy. Like, what could you do to make it seem to an outsider like you were engaging in this conventional scene, but actually it was very switchy at its core. And, you know, obviously, there's hilarious scenes which, I actually saw it one time when someone was, like, flogging someone else, and then in the middle of it, the bottom, like, you're not doing a good enough job, just, like, grab the flogger from it and started flogging him, which is fucking hysterical. That's the thing that the audience can see, and in this particular case, the audience went wild. But, you know, like, I imagine things like the person threatening, like, oh, if you don't hit me hard enough, then I'm going to hurt your ass so much later when I fuck it. It was something like that, where you can't see it as the outsider, but there's this intense switchy feel underlying what's going on between the two people. And then I think probably one of the biggest things that is important about learning to be a switch is learning the switch sub/dom triggers for you and your partners. And so things like what you want to do when you're stressed, right? Like, yes. To be able to correctly evaluate your own mood and to know what that's going to mean for you. So, like, when I was in grad school, I was sort of perennially stressed, but every time I would come home being really mad at a couple of my professors, my husband was like, oh, great, breathe in my ass, really, I ripped into tonight. Like, fucking mom, I'm like, yes, this is your future. Because that's kind of how I am when I am very stressed. But also, when I talk about the triggers, like, there, I mean, you know, the trigger to pay, but, like, the thing that, like, mm-hmm. stimulates that, right? So, you know, for a lot of people, there's a soft trigger on, like, having their hair pulled, or, like, the words that somebody uses, like, you went from calling them mistress to calling them slut, right? Like, that kind of, that'll be a big thing. I think the hair pulling is the biggest, most common trigger. You're laughing, you're raising
your mouth.
It's
the easiest, just
pulling your hair, they're gone. Pulling, for some people, it's like breath play. For some people, it's fingers in their mouth. Like, these are really common ones that people have that will trigger, like, the sub side of things. What are yours?
I have a lot of different ones. Definitely, like, titles, names can do a lot in that direction. Clothes sometimes, although not always the, like, traditional, you know, it's not like all black makes me feel dumb. I've found some scenes looking very high femme, goofy. I just seen that I dumped in, like, lit up pigtails.
Amazing.
Just, like, clothes can evoke a certain mood, music. I'm thinking of, at this last pink event, actually, I was, like, myself, but I was subbing for a scene earlier in the day and then going to dom a scene about an hour after. Going from the scene where I was subbing to the scene where I was domming, and I was, like, you know, spanking myself on the head. I was like, Elsie, you should know better. Like, in this subbing scene, I did piss play, and I cried. And so I got into heavy subspace. Yeah. I know those are things that will evoke, like, a very heavy subspace for me. So I got to the scene where I was dumbing, and I was like, hey, I was planning on being very mean to you, but I'm, like, not quite in that headspace. I'm still feeling up to the topping dumbing, but can we do something maybe a little nicer, more sensual? And they were totally down. They're excited about that. But then we get into the scene, and I put on a pair of boots, and I stepped on them. And I was like, well, now I want to hurt you. Now that, like, immediately triggered. I should have known that trigger, too.
That's fair.
Just stepping on someone. Getting stepped on or stepping on someone. Those are huge.
Yeah, I do really love stepping on people. Mm-hmm. I think as I was training myself intentionally to get out of conventional BDSM norms and the way that I like to top and dom, one of the things that I did more and more for a phase in there was I would make myself top and dom people while I was stark naked and they were clothed, which was an intentional reversal of the way that people tend to construct scenes, where traditionally, if you walk around dungeons, sometimes to a hilarious degree, like, it'll be 100 degrees at camp, and you'll still see these fully clad tops and doms, like, hurting the start. Yes, and they're just sweating in the bucket, hurting their start naked subs. And I was like, how about I fuck with this mentality? Like, does it put me into a switch space? Or does it put them into a switch space? Or is it something where I can just totally use that? And actually, I learned how to really take advantage of it, because part of why I was doing that too is I really wanted to learn to use sexuality as a form of domination, which, again, is not something that gets taught much in the scene, which blows my mind. But, like, one of the things I always found really hot is, like, sexy, like, Bond villain girls, right? Mm-hmm. Where it's like, oh, great, I'm going to, like, tantalize you with my pussy, and that's going to be the thing that gives me power over you. Mm-hmm. And I find it bizarre how much that isn't part of femdom culture, especially, but, I mean, just generally, I think BDSM subculture tends to be so desexualized, as I've talked about before in this podcast. So I was trying very intentionally to teach myself how to do that, but inevitably ends up feeling a little bit switchy, because it's not the way people usually do scenes, even though I rarely encounter people who know that consciously. They know when they see it that it looks a little weird. And so I would play around with that, but also I wanted to get out of a place. I intentionally wanted to get out of a place where clothing made me feel more dominant, because I wanted to be able to dom people while I was having sex with them naked. And so I was trying to decondition myself out of that mentality. At this point, I've actually reverted back mostly to tying people while clothed, because I find that I get turned on while I'm tying them if I'm naked, and then I get distracted. And so it's not explicitly where I'm going, I don't do it. But I did train myself like that for a hot minute. I know for myself, definitely words are a big dom trigger for me. So, like, someone calls me mistress, or it's like they're like asking things. Those definitely are my big dom triggers. And then, like, for me, although rarely have had anyone take me up on it, I feel like pretty good switch. Trigger on me would be smacking my face. But most people have been afraid of that one, understandably, because I even put in my FetLife profile that you should consider this a soft limit, and that if there's anything on this profile that bothers you, you shouldn't do it, because if you slap my face, it constitutes consent to do any of those things. And I'm too afraid to try. Which is fucking hilarious. But I feel like, especially if I'm bottoming and someone slaps my face, that would be a great way to turn me into a hot space. They would have to be prepared for violence. It's gonna be like, I've forbidden people from doing that if I'm like tied up. Like, I like genuinely smack my face. I'm, like, genuinely smack my face if I'm tied up, because I'm gonna hurt you.
Face slap, like face slap specifically, or some just
no,
is it like ratting?
It's gonna slap it specifically. So yeah, it's just like a very instinctual sort of violent response that evokes within me. And so I can't imagine what would happen if someone was bottoming for me and they slapped my face. I mean, also it's fascinating with the same, like, I also have in my profile, don't call me a bitch when I'm bottoming, call me a bitch. If you call me a bitch when I'm topping, that's fine. And so, like, if you call me a bitch when I'm bottoming, it's like kind of a degradation feel too, but if you call me an evil bitch while I'm tapping, that's hot. And so, you know, it feels really different depending on the context. And this is, again, somewhere where those sub-switch DOM triggers really matter, is knowing what is it that you're into in one space versus something else, which was something you were interested in as well, in terms of thinking about, like, what are you into?
Yeah. So, like, I've seen people on both ends of the spectrum, where some people have, like, and I think it's when people tend to lean more dom or sub. They're like, I like sub for a whole bunch of things, and then there's a few things I'm interested in doming for.
Yeah.
One or the other. Or I find myself, I am almost all of the things I'm interested in bottoming for, I am also interested in doming for.
Yeah.
Which I don't know which one is more common, but it's funny, especially like knowing, because of those like things you'd consider like triggers, like the fact that they work in reverse to put me into the reverse space. I find fascinating.
Yeah, I definitely find rope can be a particularly interesting one that for a lot of people, I've met a number of people like myself who started off as rope bottoms who couldn't find people who tied them the way they wanted to be tied. And so, like, they learned to tie the way they wish people would tie them, which in my case worked out great because I just got to teach other people how to do it. And as a strategy, I highly recommend. Just my line became, I will give you tying lessons for free if you tie me. It was a deal that quite a number of people were willing to take. For some people in certain activities, and for some switches, I think in general, there can be this element of sort of kind of wish fulfillment. So I have a long-term play partner who I've often told him, he tops me. And I'm like, you fuck me the way I wish I could fuck women. And that's what I get out of that particular arrangement, is like, I have a fantasy version of myself who's like a cis male top, and he fucks me the way I wish I could fuck women. And so sometimes in certain switch dynamics, there's a kind of wish fulfillment, I think, that goes on where it's like, I like imagining that I'm in the other side of this, or I'm making this experience for someone else that I wish someone would make for me. But you know, that can happen on either side of the thing. Isn't just like the top side wishing that they were bottoming. Obviously there's more room for that, but it isn't the only way that that goes sometimes.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it plays into like being able to fantasize on either side about it. Yeah, I'm still looking for myself as a bottom for myself, because I mean,
you want the person who will bottom the way you do?
Yes.
Good luck.
Yes, I know. Because I'm very much a sadist, and I like want to cause a lot of pain, but I am very aware that I have a much higher pain tolerance and range of things I'm willing to do than most people. I'm also looking for someone who will let me be like really, really mean to them. Like, I find a lot of people were like, yeah, I want you to be mean, but also praise me. I'm like, okay.
But what could you just be mean to?
But what if I were just really, really horrible and I didn't do anything nice, so you were in aftercare?
What would that be like for you?
But yeah, it's part of that is because I've done scenes in the reverse and known like how amazing and rewarding and hot and all of that they were for me. And like part of experiencing those scenes as a switch is like, I want to do that to somebody.
Yeah. Like, good luck.
I know.
Good fucking luck. Yeah, my long-term rope top, whenever I talk to my sister, they're always like, I wish for you to find a rope bottom like you. I'm like, that's so sweet. They're like, yeah, I feel like I can do anything with you. I'm like, that's what I aspire to, is being that bottom. That's pretty fun, for sure. Another thing that's related to all the things that we're talking about, a super important quality for any kingster, but I think even more for stitches, is self-knowledge and articulation. Those things, like Elsie was talking about, like coming out of the scene, like going out of an intense like subspace scene. For a lot of switches, including myself, there's an order to things. So like a lot of times, if you know that you're lining up in a single day to do like a topping and a bottoming scene, which order do you need to be able to do that in, ideally for the sake of your own headspace? For some people it matters a great deal, for others it matters less. I know for myself it's like I would rather, if I'm doing like three scenes in a day, it's like I would rather do your top, bottom, top, and that's like how I want to end my day, basically. Unless I'm gonna get like really fucked up and not have enough energy to do it afterwards. But some of that too is the way that topping or bottoming gives you energy. And so, you know, I've talked to a lot of people over the years who, especially switches, who feel like topping doesn't give them as much energy as bottoming does, to which I almost invariably respond, that's because so many bottoms are shitty at giving energy. And that's not a you, not a you problem. It's that so many people show up and bottom and fucking take and take and take for energy. I teach a whole class on how to fix that. But it is a really common problem, and I try not to play with those kind of bottoms. Yeah. And so I don't have that issue the way I think a lot of tops do. But I think especially when people are starting out topping, it's very common for them to not know how to balance the energy that they're taking away from a bottom. And so they just end up feeling drained, like giving so much of themselves. And so I think it's really helpful to look for yourself at the way that bottoming versus topping versus switching, like if your switch scene can energize you. And especially if you're doing a kind of switch scene like you're talking about, I think it's also really important for both people to know how they want to feel as they walk away from that, which is always a classic question, Minori style, from like, how do you want to feel at the end of the scene? And it's like, okay, well, if the way that you want to feel at the end of the scene is like, you are the person who won, that's how we're going to do one version of this. Whereas if we want to feel at the end of the scene, I am the person who won, we're going to do a different version of that, right? And so thinking about how you want to feel at the end of the night, at the end of the scene, going into the next one, this is really helpful for yourself as you're planning those types of things, and can be wildly different from person to person, and sometimes from day to day, depending on where you're starting from that particular day. You know, I remember one night, I hadn't been tired in a very long time, but I still was really stressed out, and I hadn't like hurt anyone in a really long time. And someone was like, oh, I'll tie you. I was like, I definitely want you to, but I have to hurt somebody first, or I'm not going to be able to enjoy this. And I found someone that let me kick the crap out of them. And I was like, great, now I can get tied up. But that kind of self-knowledge is really important, because otherwise you're going to do a whole scene with someone, and both of you are going to feel like you're not getting the thing out of it that you want to get out of it. Mm-hmm. And so moving into those types of headspaces, I think transitioning into those types of headspaces, sometimes it's transitioning into the headspace from the rest of your life. Sometimes it's transitioning into the headspace from the rest of your scene. Sometimes it's a combination thereof. Like, that is crucial to being able to get good switch dynamics for yourself and your partner. I think it's also really important in the context of long-term switch dynamics between two people, of trying to recognize, you know, we were saying earlier, the menu gets large. And sometimes you really have to compromise if both of you want a sub, both of you want a dom in the same night, right? Like, well, you only have time to play once tonight, and there's only so much time in the day. So, like, what are you going to do? Who's going to be in charge tonight? And is it going to be, like, a game of I get what I want tonight, you get what you want tomorrow? Are we going to try to work out some sort of complicated switch scene? It can get really hard if you're in a situation where one person's stressed out for a long time, say in grad school, right? And it's like, if I'm stressed out, the thing that I want to do is top. And my partner's like, yes, I've been bottoming for a long time now because you've been stressed for 6 months. I would like to top now, please. Mm-hmm. You're having to work that stuff out between you, and whether or not it becomes, I'm going to work this out between us, or I'm going to try to work it out with somebody else. But compromise can look different in those contexts. But recognizing that you can go through phases, and I've known plenty of people who've gone through phases 6 months or more, where it's like, yeah, I'm a switch, but I haven't wanted to top for 6 months. Like, my whole top vibe has just been dead, or my whole sub vibe has just been dead. You know, it's because some aspect of your life isn't feeding it for whatever reason. But my gods, can you burn out if you try to force that stuff? And you can burn out pretty hard if you are a true dom or a true sub, even, right? If you're like, if there's something that isn't feeding you the way that it needs to be feeding you. But thinking about that, I think, is really important in terms of calculating your own self-knowledge and articulation. Nope. And the last thing I think is really helpful in trying to become a good switch is learn to really feel out shifting energies and your partner in the movement of a single scene, right? Whatever it is that you're going with, and try to work with what you've got. And the best switches, like, again, back to the two switch, is like, I will show up and I will feed off of whatever I am given. And we used to joke in my house a lot. The definition of a two swish is if you're hot enough, the answer is yes. I might be a dominating swish, but if you're hot enough, I'll definitely bottom for you, right? And that's a common theme among switches I'll adapt to you, but it's also adapting to the particular circumstance. Sometimes in the middle of a scene, you just feel a moment and you grab it. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that's the thing that you should do. And sometimes it's the thing that you shouldn't. But the improvisation and actively trying to work out what you're doing with your partner, I think can really take your switching to the next level, which is something you've become an expert at. Do you have any notion of how you became an expert at that?
Oh, wow. I don't know that I would call myself an expert, but
you've certainly done some pretty elaborate versions of this thing.
I certainly have, yeah. I think it really is just vibes, which makes it hard to say.
Hard to articulate.
But I find that I can do more satisfying switch scenes with people who I have done both sides of already.
Yeah.
Just triggers I know. And also it's a little bit of just someone I can trust to look around and find out.
Yeah.
And read signals of are you just ratting me and I'm still domming, or are you trying to take control in this moment? And if I'm not sure, do I back up a little and let you try and take control, or do I squash that and say, no, I'm still in control? And it's funny because sometimes it's either direction. Sometimes I try and squash it and they push back even harder. Sometimes they go, okay, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I was just being a little brat.
I think it helps to be doing that kind of thing with people where you trust that they're not going to be really upset at either version of the outcome, right?
Yes.
Not the kinds of people where they're going to leave the scene feeling bad if they lost, right?
Yes.
And so, they're going to be they're going to feel like they won regardless. And that really helps in terms of the feeling safe and secure and the trust of grabbing those moments. Whereas if people are really picky about it,
mm-hmm.
that's harder.
Yeah. But that's what, like you said before, it's important to, discuss that beforehand, how you want to walk away feeling, because, if we've discussed that you want to take power at some point and I just continually squash your every attempt too, then it's not going to be fun. But if we can do some back and forth where I'm I squash your attempt to gain power this time, but the next time I give a little and you give a little and we eventually switch. So, making sure the expectations are set ahead of time, but not necessarily having to have people. If literally hey, I'm going to say this phrase, and then we're going to switch.
Yeah.
And that could work really well for a lot of people, but sometimes it is more figuring out the energy and doing a push-pull thing, which I find really satisfying.
Yeah. They're always my goal. Doesn't anybody else's legitimacy of your dance dynamic? Does it matter if the other people have the legitimacy of your switch dynamic? It's a switch in your relationship if you and your partner agree that it is. And as long as everybody's happy about that, it's all that matters. It doesn't matter if follows them by the book, some standards, what those things hurt, as long as you guys feel like it's hot and it's fun and it's, you're defining it as switchy, fine. That's what it is.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. I feel like one of the things I love most about switching is it is in line with all of the other ways in my life of queering situations, of
yes.
queering kink, of these rules are how do we bend them on purpose?
Yes.
How do we make something the switch relationships I know have the most insanely personalized dynamics
yes.
and things that are just so delightful and so creative and I don't know. It feeds my soul.
It feeds my soul, too. And I think that's part of why I spent so many years engaging in pretty intense switchy stuff before I ultimately settled into being more dom. And I feel like it made me a much better dom for a variety of reasons. I actually really strongly discourage people from following the traditional leather version of reality where it's oh, you're supposed to be a sub for some period of time or to learn to be a good dom. No, that doesn't teach you the right thing at all. Because mm-hmm. if you're a dom by nature and you're not a sub by nature, you're not getting the same thrill and experience out of that the person who actually is that thing is getting from it. So you're oh god, I'm just making someone suffer. I would just say that for myself, having spent a lot of time trying to break down a lot of traditional recipes for how to do kink that I was given when I got into the scene really helped me find my own style of domination in a world where nobody gave me the recipe for that at all. And so having spent a lot of time breaking down all of the elements of what makes a scene, and what do I enjoy about it, and how do I tell if my partner's enjoying it, I feel like really helped me ultimately create a version of being a dom that was nothing like what anyone handed to me. And you know, for myself, that ultimately ended up being a pretty switchy version of being a dom. And you know, if anyone doesn't like that, that's fine. They don't need to play with me. But like, it helps me attract the right kinds of people. And regularly when I walk into rooms and I'll be like, yeah, I really enjoy finding sadistic submissives, there's always someone in the room whose eyes light up. And they're like, I never used those words to describe myself before you said that, but now. That's an interview that makes sense to me. Or like being someone who likes to hurt people, particularly exactly in the way that they like to hurt. Like, I can't feel like good about hurting them unless I know that I hurt them the way that they hurt. Like, yes, they're great. We're a solid match. And so figuring out those kinds of complicated things about myself and what I like, and there's always someone who's on the other side of that. And I think that's the other thing that is easy to miss as you're handed this recipe book of like how doms are supposed to be and how subs are supposed to be. Whatever your particular weird exception is to that, there's always someone on the other side of that.
Yes.
There's always someone else who's like, I never thought I'd find the reverse of the thing you are. And yet, they exist somewhere. You have to complain. But they exist. If I have nothing else, take away from this. You know, power dynamics are in the eye of the beholder. And however weird your particular set of switchy alignments are, chances are there's someone else out there who lines up on the other side of it. And I hope that you have fun finding that. And thank you, Elsie, for joining me.
Yes, thank you, Julie. This has been a blast.
Thanks for listening.